This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you in part by...
With a unique design and construction, DNA Guitars is a clear choice when looking for the all-around guitar. DNA Guitars' recipe for creating perfect instruments is steeped in tradition while looking toward the future. DNA's recessed bridge construction is a five-point contact bridge, a solid brass bridge that is inset into the body, maximizing strength, contact, and string vibration. An incredibly comfortable guitar to play, DNA Guitars molds to your body, and the neck profiles are wonderful to play across. DNA uses an exclusive 100% solderless wiring harness that is designed for guitars with single coil or humbucker setup. Looking for versatility? Look no more. Check out DNA Guitars. Go to dnaguitarcompany.com. Custom guitars handcrafted in the USA. DNA Guitars. Innovation to fuel your inspiration.
And also by...
Hey everybody, Mark Davin from Guitar Radio Show. Have you heard about Lock Knob? LockKnob.com? Lock Knob is a revolutionary product invented by a musician for musicians, solving the long-time problem of lost settings. How many times have you been at a gig or a session only to have to reset all of your settings on your amp or your pedals because they move during transit? You can upgrade your existing knobs on your amp, pedals, mixer, guitar, almost anything with a pot, with an all-aluminum quality made reusable knob that does more than just look pretty. Never lose your settings again. Lock it down with Lock Knob. Go to LockKnob.com for more.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
All right, people. Our next guest, Joe Bonamassa, calls him his collecting mentor. He has he's an author of five books now, and I think a sixth coming. I think I'm right. You might want to correct me once we get you introduced. And then he's worked with Gibson Guitars over the years, and he is the number one aficionado on the Gibson Les Paul, particularly the Sunbursts. We have with us Mr. Vic Duprat. How are you, Vic?
Great, Mark. Thanks for having me here today.
Thanks for being on. I appreciate you taking the time out to talk to me and my listeners. So is this your fifth book is coming, or your sixth book is coming?
It's the fifth or the sixth. It could be either way. The first book was duplicated. We reintroduced the book again with some different photos in the midsection, and just because of the popularity, it was out of print, and so Centerstream decided to bring the book back out again.
Oh, okay.
So actually, this is Burst, and there's Burst 58 to 60, which is the same book, though.
Right, and then there was Sunburst Alley.
Yeah, that's a collector's item now, and I don't know why. The book is absolutely terrible. It was it was just starting to get into digital books, you know, and yeah. They played so many tricks with the photography in the book. I mean, a terrible book, but I don't know how it's a collector's item now.
Well, I guess, you know, it's interesting. It's sort of like the Burst itself, right? There's so few of them, so people want it.
They want to see them, you know?
That's a good thing. That's all right. You're also the co-owner of Guitar Gallery, right?
Correct.
Yeah. You know, you always like to ask the main question, why? Why did this happen for you? What was it about the, you know, 58, 59, and 60 Burst that captured your imagination? I mean, I know what it did for me. What did it do for you?
Well, let's get started with the beginning here. I have a brother that's a few years older than me, and, you know, he would bring albums home by... Mike Bloomfield with Al Kooper, Paul Butterfield Band, the early Fleetwood Mac, you know, the Jeff Beck Group, which is still one of my favorite albums of all times, Truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would turn me on to this stuff as a kid. And, you know, through research, I found out these guys were all using, you know, Les Pauls from a certain era.
Mm-hmm.
And that got my drive going to looking for one of these guitars. And then when I scored my first vintage guitar, which was a 57 TV Junior, I mean, that was it for me. From there, it just went crazy. You know, I had to have guitars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so was Jeff Beck like your earliest influence as far as guitar playing?
No, absolutely not. I mean, like me, probably with everybody else in my age group, it was the Beatles, naturally, you know, and seeing a lot of the English bands coming on, the Stones, you know, the Animals, and, you know, guitar was just so popular.
Yeah, the whole British invasion thing then.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. So you picked, what was the first guitar that you had? What was it, a Junior?
Well, that wasn't my first electric guitar.
Oh, okay.
It was the first vintage guitar that I found, you know?
Oh, okay.
And that's what started me on the vintage trail. I mean, I knew these guys were playing Les Pauls, but, you know, back then it was still a little fuzzy, you know, exactly what kind of Les Paul was, you know? And then after, you know, a few years later of research and, you know, everything just started coming out, you know, what these guys were playing, you know?
Right. And, I mean, back then there was no internet. How did you research?
No, there was no internet.
How was their research?
You know, I mean, you would see a lot in, like, you know, some of the magazines back then, some of the rock magazines. You know, you had Circus Magazine.
Right.
You know, a few things like that, you know, where you would see these guitars.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew Jimmy Page had two of these. And I said, you know what, that was my goal. If he had two, I had to have two, you know?
Right. And your first burst was the one that's actually on the cover of the first book, the first burst, Believers?
No. My first burst actually came from a Guitar Trader in Red Bank, New Jersey.
Ah.
This was like in 1972, and a good friend of mine who worked there, Tim Kummerer, sold it to a girl that actually bought me my first burst.
God bless her.
Yeah, no shit, huh? You know? And the second burst I had got from a guy in Wheeling, West Virginia, named Roger Horde, who taught Brad Paisley how to play, actually. And he had a beautiful 59 burst. It was called the Wheeling Burst. I can still remember the serial number, 9-18-91.
Wow.
And I got that from Roger, and those were my two bursts I had for a while, you know?
Yeah.
And as the interest kept going with these guitars, and, you know, I'll trade one for another one, buy this one, trade this one, it just kept going and going and going.
Mm-hmm. That first one you got, what year was that one? Was that 58 or 59?
It was also 59.
59. Now, yeah. Here's the thing. Everyone always covets the 59. That's, like, the one. Like, that, for some reason, they were getting it right. And, you know, everybody likes that chunky neck, you know. What is the major differences between 50? I know what the difference is with 60, obviously, but with 58 and 59, what was happening there?
Well, you know, 58 still had the thin frets, mm-hmm. you know, and 59 was the first year to put the bigger fret on the guitars.
Right.
And, I think that's an attraction still yet to guys that, you know, bending strings naturally, it's easier to do it. You know, and I think 59 just became the year for mm-hmm. some reason, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, 60, you know, by mid-60, early to mid-60, they went to a thinner profile neck.
Right.
But to me personally, 50, 59, or 60, they're all great guitars.
Yeah.
You know, to me.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's interesting. I've played some even earlier Les Pauls. They weren't bursts, obviously. But earlier Les Pauls, like, there were gold tops and stuff like that, like mm-hmm. 52 gold top, with a neck that wasn't a baseball bat. It wasn't one of those chunky necks.
Well, exactly. That's such a myth, too.
Yeah.
A lot of these necks weren't that big on the, you know, the gold tops and the bursts. Sure, you had a few here and there, you know, the carve might have been a little bit different. But a lot of the necks weren't that big. It's such a myth. I mean, when Gibson first issued these guitars, I mean, they were like Louisville Sluggers. They were enormous necks, and
mm-hmm.
Just not anywhere near what a real burst neck actually felt like.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. So, was it the actual aesthetic of the burst that attracted you initially, or was it because these icons that we love?
The icons, Bloomfield, Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Page, Peter Green, they all had this guitar, Mick Taylor.
Yeah.
You know?
I just had Dan Erlewine on the show.
Oh, geez, that's great. And Dan wrote just a great story for Burst Believers 1.
Dan's great. I love him to death. He's just a sweet, sweet man and has the best stories. And he was telling us the story about his Burst, his 59, mm-hmm. that he owned and played with the Prime Movers. And they were doing a lot of opening gigs for Bloomfield. I think he was still with Butterfield, and Bloomfield was like, I gotta have that guitar. Look, I'll trade you my gold top and $300. I think it was, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And finally, Dan gave in and did it, and that was the Bloomfield Les Paul.
Yeah, the rest is history. There.
Yeah.
And you know what's really crazy is Bloomfield is such a monster player and given credit for playing, you know, basically the first guy on this side to be playing a Burst in the States. And actually, though, it really wasn't. It was John Sebastian.
Really?
Yeah, John Sebastian preceded Mike Bloomfield. I mean, naturally, he wasn't that caliber of player. But if you read the story of John in Burst Believers 2, he even talks about Bloomfield talking about, you know, talking to him about buying his Burst and
right.
you know, one. And John explained in his paragraph how, you know, Bloomfield found one that was just absolutely beautiful, you know, crazy, flamey, beautiful guitar.
Amazing.
But John Sebastian was the first guy in the States to be seen with one.
That's interesting. That's
just
interesting.
Just as Keith Richards was the first, you know, in the UK to be seen with one.
Wow, even before Clapton?
Yes, even before Clapton.
Hmm, interesting.
Although Clapton is the one that, you know, put it through its rigors and tests and really, you know, through Clapton, I think the guitar got its most acclaim, though.
Yeah,
know?
Definitely got its notoriety through him, for sure. It was the Beano, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So throughout the years of collecting guitars, and particularly collecting Bursts, was it the one that's on the cover of the first Believers book? Is that your holy grail, would you say?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
You know, that guitar is just a beautiful, beautiful guitar. I remember seeing this guitar. It was an ad in Guitar Player magazine in, like, 1980, 81 for a store called California Guitar. The owner's name was Frank Lucido, and he would use that guitar in his ad in Guitar Player magazine. And I said, God, I got to have that guitar, you know? And all the guys that were into Burst at the time kind of lusted after that guitar, you know?
Yeah.
And the guitar, I think, was owned by Ed King at one time from Skynyrd. And the guitar eventually wound up at Groom Guitars in 1984 or 85, and it got sold to a player in Denmark, and I would call Grooms all the time. Just if that thing ever comes back, I got to have that guitar. If it ever comes back, one day when Christy Carter still worked there, she has her own shop now called Carter's Guitars in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
But she called me at the shop and said, "Vic, I think we're getting that guitar back." I didn't ask how much it was. I said, "I'll take it. Hold it for me." You know.
Well, it's just exquisite. That Burst is.
It's amazing. It's one of the most beautiful Bursts I've ever owned. You know, and I've owned a lot of them. You know.
I mean, and I don't really even see that much patina on there.
I'm sorry.
I don't really see much patina on there at all.
Well, there is. You know, I mean, if you held it, you would see it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it sure holds up in the pictures, that's for sure. You know,
the thing just lights up like a Christmas tree.
Oh man, it's something. You know, and it's never been the Burst that I really lusted after. No, the Burst that I've always I own the one of my Les Pauls. I only have one Burst, whereas the others are all solid colors. But the Burst that I have is Tobacco Sunburst. I've always loved the Tobacco Sunburst.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I've always lusted after is the one that's on the cover of Burst Believers 2.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's
Goldie.
Far in Texas, actually. And that serial number is 090629. It's nicknamed Goldie.
Yeah.
And Gibson did a collector's choice of that guitar. guitar, as yeah. they did with the one on the cover of Burst Believer's One.
Right, yeah, and I want to get into that with you. But what do they call that burst? Is that an amber burst? Is that a, what is that?
Amber burst, but I'm going to have to say one thing about that guitar. It has the most beautiful, honey, faded burst I've ever seen. It's absolutely gorgeous.
It is amazing, and it is the, to me, that's my grail. Right there,
mm-hmm.
That's the one. I'm like, oh, wow, it's
that's
just
what's cool about the burst. You know, every single one is different from, you know, the color of the guitar to the type of flame the guitar has,
yeah.
the size of the
yeah.
guitar, sound of them. They're all different, you know.
Yeah,
that's what makes it such an interesting guitar, I think.
Yeah. Now, have you ever gotten a chance to be in the vicinity of Billy Gibbons' Pearly Gates?
No, I have not.
I'm always curious about that guitar because everybody always says, you know, it must have been, everything must have been just right that day. You know, the glue was just right, the temperature was right, the wood was right, the pick, everything was just right that day because it is pretty flawless sound wise for sure. I don't know what it's like to play, but it seems flawless to me in so many ways. Once again, you know, We as players and collectors and dreamers, we tend to a lot of times, mythologize this stuff a little bit too. And I think it really gets
a lot of it is myth. That's for sure.
Yeah, and it gets us going for sure. And that's why when somebody like you goes ahead and does all that research and writes a book, we all want to buy that book.
Well, I'll tell you what, thank you very much, and I've been very fortunate with the first two versions. They've done so well, and it's hard to believe, you know, well, maybe not, but there's just so much interest still in the burst.
Mm.
I mean, the third version of this book is coming up.
That's, yeah.
Unbelievable, you know.
Tell us what we can expect in this new book.
Well, naturally, that's very similar to Burst Believers 2 again, with quotes. More stories, some great stories in this one. Got a few players that probably a lot of people probably forgot about even. Mick Grabham from Procol Harum,
mm-hmm.
who did the, you know, the guitar work like on songs like Conquistador, if
right.
you remember that.
Right.
He had such a great tone. Tony Hicks from the Hollies, he explains, had a great interview with him. He explains why the burst did not work for him. There's a guy that the burst didn't work for, you know?
Hmm.
It was a very unique story. Martin Barrs in his book, you
mm-hmm.
know? Able to get a few people here that, you know, aren't the, you know, the main guys you look at when you talk burst, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So what? After you wrote the books, is when you teamed up with Gibson to start doing some of these limited edition
ones?
Well,
I did that before Burst Believers 1. I did a run in 2009 called the Depraved Bourbon Fade,
uh-huh.
and you know, it's an idea I had for like a certain color of the guitar and the patina, and I was very lucky through my Gibson salesman. To get Rick Nielsen to be the poster child for the guitar, I guess you'd say, you know?
Yeah.
And Rick's such a phenomenal player and such a great band Cheap Trick is, you know?
Absolutely. One of my all-time favorites.
You know, Cheap Trick, I think, is one of the best bands in the U.S. ever, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
No, they're just super.
Yeah.
I was able to work with him on that one. And I did a run in 2011... I had, it was called the Prey Carmel Burst, and Brian Ray from Paul McCartney's band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did ads with him in Vintage Guitar Magazine,
yeah.
And then I worked with Brian again a couple years ago on his signature SG. Brian and I came up with specs for that guitar.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
It's a beautiful guitar. It's one of the most beautiful instruments I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, the finish on it and the specs of the guitar, you know, looks like a tuxedo almost, you know?
Yeah,
it's
a
great super guitar, and he's using that now with Paul.
Yeah. So when you did I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, then I did a third run of guitars, and that one was with Mick Ralphs.
Right.
Called Shadows of 59, and I was really stoked about that. He's one of my favorite players. I just love his style. It's a slow and smooth and methodical, and it's always perfect, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's amazing.
And then I did a run that really, went over great. It was called Vic's Old School 59.
Yeah.
And it was just really worn and torn guitar. The Bigsby removal holes, Grovers, you know. So it was something a little bit different that Gibson never really got into. I mean, they were making perfect, brand-new, shining guitars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get one out there that, looks like somebody would play on a stage, you know,
right.
In the early 70s, like one of your guitar heroes would, you know?
Right.
And so I got Stevie from Buck Cherry, and I ran that ad with him and VG. And then I think the year before last, I did a run with Rusty Anderson from the Paul McCartney Band. It was called the Stick Shift 59 Les Paul. And it came with it came with a Bigsby on it.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the name Stick Shift, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the process of another run right now with Jimmy Rip, who was Mick Jagger's guitarist, and he plays with a band called Television, a punk rock band called Television.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one I'm into right now.
So when you do these runs, how many are in a run?
Usually 25.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So,
you know, I'm quite honored to tell you the truth that, you know, some of my runs are, you know, very collectible right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So here's a question. Out of the run, do you keep one?
You know what? That's a good question. I always keep one per run, you know?
Yeah.
And but what I'll do is when the next one comes in, I'll sell that one. And, you know, since it's a prototype, you know, and I'll grab the next one.
Okay. That's a fringe benefit right there, man. That's fantastic.
Yes, it is. And the one that I did in 2011 with a total bonus for me was, I mean, being, you know, growing up with the Beatles, was I had one made for Paul.
Uh-huh.
Left-handed.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I've never seen him use it. I wonder always what happened to that guitar. And then just this past year, you know, there was a picture of him in a studio with that guitar and Brian Ray, you know, through Facebook, says, Vic, check this out, you know, and it was Paul using that guitar.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. That must have been very gratifying.
It definitely was. Really, really was.
Yeah. I want to go back to the guitar with Stevie from Buck Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
That guitar is outrageous. It's just
it is insane.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
What kind of pickups are in there?
The custom Buckers, which Gibson used on the Jimmy Page guitar.
Okay.
And those pickups sound great.
Yeah, they're gritty when they need to be, and then roll off the volume, and they're really bell like.
Yeah, nice sound.
Yeah, great stuff. So when you work with somebody like when you work with Gibson, are you come to them with the specs? You come with them with everything, and say, this is what I want to do, and they say, yeah, or do they kind of collaborate?
On my own runs, it's my own specs as far as, you know, colors, aging, pickups, colors of bobbins, wear, you know, Grovers, but still having the Clueson imprints. I mean, that's my specs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They do a collector's choice of mine, and that's all in their hands. They take my guitar, they take it to the factory, and, you know, do everything they need to on the guitar to match it, and they reproduce that guitar to the best of their ability, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to admit, they do a pretty damn good job. They're making a great guitar right now.
That's cool. That's cool.
I mean, they've come a long way, the custom shops, since they started in 93 to where they're at now.
Yeah.
I mean, they are making just a fabulous, fabulous guitar.
Yeah, there's some pretty wild stuff coming out of the custom shop. The main factory, I've got some concerns about.
Sure.
You know,
yeah, he went through that whole debacle in 2015 with the robo tuners.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was, I mean, $3.5 million of R&D on something like that. And then, you know, everybody.
Lining the board. I mean,
Yeah.
Why change perfection, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I always thought, you know, why don't you just go ahead and try and figure out ways of making the guitar, you know, a Gibson guitar a lot more affordable, you know, introductory models instead of an Epiphone, mm-hmm. Introductory model, sort of like it was back in the day when you'd get a Junior. You know, I mean, Billy Gibbons talks about it all the time. His first real good guitar was a Junior, and he had a Fender Champ amp, and that was what it's all he needed.
What a setup, huh? I mean, back then that would be considered a beginner's rig, you know. And
yeah.
Now it's like a pro rig, you know.
Yeah.
With that recording album.
Well, yeah. I mean, Clapton used a Fender Champ for Layla.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I wish they would go that route, but yeah, but it's a whole different ball game that's happening with the custom shop. Everything that I see at the shows or when I go visit here in Austin, the Gibson shop here, it's always like, wow, that's pretty beautiful. Met Les himself and spent any time with him?
No, I have not, unfortunately. Oh. You know, it's a shame to. I would love to have met the man.
Yeah, I would have wondered what he would have thought about the books, you know.
Not him, where would we all be, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. I spent a lot of time with him back in the 80s, and mm-hmm. and he was just wonderful to be around and incredibly sarcastic. So when you get together with somebody like Stevie from Buckcherry or Rick, Rick Nielsen, did you say, okay, did you get any input from them, or is it really this is your baby?
No, this is my own thing, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. I just came up with, like I said, the specs for the guitar and, you know, trying to attach that to somebody to be seen with the guitar.
Right. So... if you could tell me, and this is just for me. I don't care about the audience right now. This is just for me. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about Goldie?
About Goldie?
Yeah, about the specs
on
that.
Yeah, the guitar. A dealer by the name of Bruce Sandler bought that guitar at the Dallas show. I think in 1980, 1981, around in there.
Yeah.
And the guitar has been through a bunch of different collectors' hands,
mm-hmm.
and it's currently with a collector in Texas right now.
Okay, so you don't own it any longer?
No, I don't.
Okay. So it's a collector here in Texas has it, huh? Interesting.
If you can get your hands on it, that's one of them.
Yeah.
That's definitely one of them, I tell you.
For sure. Well, you know, the thing is, for me, too, I'm also doubly challenged in that I'm a lefty.
This one might make it convert. Yeah. You know, Mark?
I've often thought about it. You know, yeah. I think to myself,
burst, that's it, you know?
I've often thought about how many guitars I would possibly own beyond what I do now if I were a right-handed guitar player. I mean, I think of all the guitars.
Yes. What is your favorite guitar? Is it a Les Paul or is it... Strat.
Well, you know, it's funny. For years and years, it was always Gibsons. It was Explorers and Les Pauls for years and years and years. That was my thing. And in the last 10 years, well, no, even less, last 5 years, I've been playing a lot more Fenders. But it's funny today.
Went to the dark side on us.
But what it was interesting today, while I was preparing for this interview to talk with you, I pulled out my Tobacco Burst. And I'm holding it in my hands, and I'm playing, and I'm saying, "Wow, it is literally like putting on a pair of your favorite old jeans. It is that familiar and that comfortable, and I fall right into place with it again." And then I say to myself, "Gee, why am I struggling? Because you know, I feel like Fenders fight me, and maybe I like maybe I just like a good fight. I don't know."
I'm too old to fight. Give me a Les Paul, you know.
But the Les Paul is for me, when I play it, it's a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, it's like welcome back home, you know?
Yeah.
And it's that sound that you can recognize instantly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And I'm getting ready to do this new project, and I'm deciding on what's going to be on it.
And what year is your Les Paul?
Oh, it's an 05.
Okay.
Yeah. But
reissue, or is it a standard? Or?
It's a reissue.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's a 60 profile. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I mean, it really is. I got lucky with that.
Five.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably your 60 profile neck for 05 is actually what a real 59 feels like, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's such, like we were just talking previously, you know, such a myth about neck size on these guitars.
Interesting.
And it took a long time for Gibson to realize that, too, you know.
Huh. So really, it was just who was at the lathe that day.
Yep.
You know,
I've got bursts that, you know, every neck size is totally different.
Yeah.
I mean, some almost feel like a 60. They're that thin, you know?
That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, yeah, like I said earlier about the 52s. I mean, I played a bunch of 52s, and like, this isn't a fat neck. This isn't a, you know, a baseball bat by any stretch of the imagination at all.
You got to admit, you know, just in general, I think the electric guitar, it's got to be the greatest invention of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And I mean, where would music be without that, you know? I mean,
well, it changed popular culture entirely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But but now after today, picking that up again, and I'm saying, wow, huh, maybe I need to get another.
An amp of choice?
Amp of choice. I vacillate between Fender amps and Boogies. I love Boogies.
I've
been a Boogie fan for, oh, goodness, I guess early 80s I got into the Boogies. And I really, really love, and I got turned on about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I got turned on to, I met Mr. Ted Kornblum from Magnetone.
Yeah. Magnetone.
And
I'm impressed with those.
Wow, man, those Super 59s are just one of the best amps I've ever played through. It was magical.
Yep. Great amp.
Just magical. Really, really great. So, yeah, that's on my hit list. You know, okay. I figure
it never ends, does it?
No, it doesn't. It's, you know, and
old you are, you still have a hit list.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking here, I'm in the studio, and I'm looking, and there's 1, 2, 3 Boogies, there's 2 Fender amps, you know, and I still want to go ahead and get a Magnetone, so.
It never ends, bud.
Yeah, what about you amp-wise?
You know, I like Blackface amps, Fender amps,
mm-hmm.
and Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my, you know, two main go-to amps for myself that I like to play through.
The Marshall amp that always blew me away was the Silver Jubilee, and when it first came out, nobody really liked it. But I liked it. I liked it from the get-go. I thought it was a great amp.
Yeah, I mean, Bob Lawson was torn with those for a while. Now he's using, you know, high-power Tweak Twins, but, boy, he makes anything sound good, though, you know? That's amazing.
Yeah,
just incredible.
Sure. Absolutely.
Just over the top.
So what's been your experience? I had Waddy Wattel on the show, and we did an hour and a half interview just talking about his career, and we talked about his Les Pauls. What has been your experience with him as far as when he contributed to the book?
Waddy's been super with me. I finally got to meet him this past summer. You know, I took a photo of him with his Collector's Choice guitar for the book.
Mm-hmm.
But Waddy, I think, is just an amazing, amazing talent. You know, I mean, he can fit in with anybody.
Yeah.
He's such a super player, and, you know, and like you said, we have so many records in our collections, we don't know it's actually him on those records.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. I mean, on his website, he has his whole entire discography on there, and it's just, it goes on, I think it's 10 pages long.
I can believe it.
Yeah.
I can believe it.
It's amazing.
He's touring with Joe Walsh right now, and they sound great together.
Yeah, they really do. He's on, what record was that? Oh, God, I think he's on God Any Gum. I'm not sure. But he was, you know, he was playing those Stonesy type of riffs and those open chords on I Can Play That Rock and Roll, and it was like predestined that he was going to end up being an expensive wino, you know.
He fit perfect, didn't he?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Just a bit perfect.
Yeah. So do you get to play much yourself nowadays or no?
Actually, yeah, I always play. And, you know, I'll throw little snippets up on Facebook of my playing, you know, if I, you know, come up with an idea. I think it's kind of cool, mm-hmm. you know. And a lot of guys, you know, I mean, nothing's wrong with it. They'll play their blues licks and, you know, rock licks and stuff on there. I try to come up with something a little more musical as far as just myself playing, you know.
Yeah.
Just come up with a cool lick or something like that or cool phrase. Something a little bit different.
Yeah. So are you still going around and doing any of the guitar shows around?
Not too much anymore. You know, the guitar shows anymore are almost like it's all reissues mostly.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see too many really cool pieces. Usually the great pieces now don't hit the shows. You know, everybody has their little clique of buyers that they sell to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like become like
underground.
Yeah, it's almost like stocks now.
This is really getting to be almost underground collectability anymore.
Yeah. It's almost like stocks.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
And I'll tell you one thing I always tell everybody, though. That's where you should talk about the stock thing. You know, people say, hey, should I buy this guitar for an investment? I tell everybody, look, buy the guitar because you like it. Buy the guitar for what it means to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it gets to be worth more money down the road, good for you. But if you're buying a guitar for an investment, that's not the right thing to buy a guitar for.
Mm-hmm. And play it.
Yeah, play it.
Yeah.
That's what you got it for.
Yeah. I mean, there are guitars I have in my collection that I bought to play, but for one reason or another, I'm not playing. And I feel I feel guilty about that. And I'm like, somebody should be playing this guitar.
Well, you know, you're correct there, because I've got guitars I probably haven't seen in a couple of years. You just can't get to them, you know.
Yeah.
Hate to think you got that many guitars you can't get to them.
Yeah,
but you know, you got your first guitars in a rack there that you seem to pick out the most.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. Yeah,
so it's such a great hobby. It's such a super hobby. You know,
it really is.
And it's you know, it's what rock and roll cut its teeth on was these guitars.
Yeah, well, these guitars actually spawned this show. I mean, if it wasn't for these guitars, I wouldn't have this show. You know. I wouldn't have this show, and I wouldn't be talking to people like you or Waddy or Leslie West or any of these other folk that come on the show. So, you know, yeah, it's really, like I said earlier, it changed popular culture entirely, you know.
You know, I think no matter who you meet, no matter how big they are, you know, they all have the same common interest of guitars.
Oh, yeah.
You know, no matter how big they are, they still like to talk about their first guitar. Or,
yeah.
You know, who were their heroes when they were growing up playing.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's so cool, you know?
Yeah. So I have to ask you, since you said before when you said that, when I told you I was owning some Fenders, do you own any Fenders?
No. I used to collect them too, but you know, I just want to get a little bit more specialized with my collection,
right?
And you know, trade most of them off for some type of Gibson guitar,
right?
You know, but I'm just a Gibson guy. I always love the 335s, like the Firebirds, the V's, the Explorers. I just, you know, the body styles. I just really aesthetically, to my eye, I just like the way they look.
Yeah. Yeah, well, for me, yeah, Les Paul, Gibson-wise, and I owned a lot of Vs, too, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just really comfortable guitars to play and just did what they needed to do. They were, you know, really good. It was almost like, you know, it's interesting. I always looked at the Fenders, like the Strats and the Tellys, sort of like, well, that's your, you know, that's your Chevy or your Dodge Dart and stuff like that. And the Gibson was always like the Cadillac.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's how it always felt to me. Well, what's ahead for you beyond the book that's coming out? And you had mentioned earlier.
Tell you the truth, Mark, I'd just be happy getting the book out. It's been a long labor of love on this one.
How long have you been working on this one?
Over a year, you know, probably about a year and a half. Uh-huh. I mean, it's just succession. It's one book went to another one, which went to another one. Actually, Burst Believers 1 went into Burst Believers 2 almost immediately because I had extra photos and stories and quotes that came in after the book, you know. And First Believers 3 started off with a bang. We were able to get a lot of great quotes from some guys. Kirk Hammett wrote a foreword. Brad Whitford wrote a foreword for the book. We've got Peter Frampton in there.
Oh, cool.
Wrote a great story.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some really great guys in here.
I just saw him recently here in Austin, and it was
acoustic show or electric?
Both. For Austin, he did both. He did
such a great player, isn't he?
He did 45 minutes of electric, shut the band down, and then came out and did acoustic all by himself, and then did another hour of electric after that. And it was just unreal. And it was Les Pauls all night long.
He hasn't lost one step in his playing.
Not a single.
Step. Great.
Yeah. And his voice still sounds good, too.
Yeah.
I found a video of you singing, actually.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're pretty good.
Oh, my God. You must have really dug deep for that one.
I like to research. So yeah, no, I found a lot of cool stuff about you. Yeah. Some stuff actually, I found some really good demo videos that people did of some of the particularly the that first run you did with Gibson, the Believer burst that you did. There's some great demos out there of that guitar. That guitar is remarkable the way it sounds.
Yes, it is, actually. I mean, the original one is for sure. It's just amazing. And, you know, I was really psyched when they attempted to do that guitar.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they did a great job on the guitar. And what's really funny is I just had a customer call me from Thailand. Says, can you get me a Believer burst? And I said, you know, I don't even know if I can still get you one of those or not, you know? And I called up Gibson's. They still had the template for it. And they said, sure, let's get one made up for him.
Wow, that's great.
I've got another one of my guitars. It's going to be collector's choice, made by the end of the year or beginning of next. Serial number is 92072. And it's just a beautiful burst. If you have a chance, look it up on the internet. It's a great-looking burst, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do with this one.
That's cool. And Gibson never did one of Goldie, did they?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And how many did you do of that?
Goldie might have been the first or second one they did. I can't remember right now. But it was in the, you know, the top couple of collector's choices they've done.
Oh, man. Would they make me a lefty?
You know, they probably would. You need a mate, let me know.
I will definitely do that. Well, we're friends on Facebook, so I'll definitely.
Sure.
I'll think about that. That's, oh, my Lord. That's just amazing. Well, Vic, I can't thank you enough for taking some time and being on the show today.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. Thank you for having me. Had a great conversation with you, and I really enjoyed myself.
Good, I'm glad. And let us know when the new book comes out, and we'll promote it over on guitarradioshow.com and all of our social media as well.
Thank you so much, Mark.
All right, thanks. Hold on one second, but we're going to sign off right here.
Okay.
Check out Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, and Tumblr, and of course, on guitarradioshow.com.
Now everybody say, F*** you, Ed!
I like this crowd already.
Production. New episodes of Guitar Radio Show air every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Player FM, Podomatic, and of course on guitarradioshow.com.